Hi, I'd like to welcome David Fry to our first inaugural podcast with Strategy Systems. David Fry and I have had an opportunity to work together over many transformation initiatives over the last 5 years. And it is my pleasure to invite David to this conversation as we continue the ongoing discussions about transformation in healthcare in the Ontario health system. But before I do that, I would like to introduce David because there is a lot that David brings to the table. David is currently the VP for Integrated Client and Community Care at VHA Home Care Services, and he has over 20 years of experience in home care. Now, since it is Occupational Therapy Recognition Month, I just want to say that David started out as an OT and has led many organizations through his journey as a leader, including the Ontario Association of Community Care Access Centres, the CCACs, the Mississauga Halton-Lynn, as well as other SPOs or service provider organizations. Currently, David is also on the board of director at Casey House and previously at Sherman Health. Wow, that's a wealth of knowledge and experience, David. I can't wait to have this discussion with you. So welcome. Happy to have you here.
Thanks, Priya. It's great to see you. And I think actually it's almost been over 6 years since we've known each other and worked together. And that's been a really positive experience for me working with you and your team and getting the expertise of Strategy Systems to support some activities at the different organizations I've worked. So lovely to see you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, it has been because at the Lynn is where we first started that journey together. So true. So David, I mean, I'd love to hear about your journey as it's kind of evolved as you've led various organizations through this whole transformation that we are seeing ramping up in Ontario healthcare. What are some of the key things that stand out to you?
Sure. I think for me, when it comes to being, so fortunate to work with a team and work with partners in leading a transformational agenda, bringing forward some initiatives that will hopefully make a positive impact in terms of client and provider experience and outcomes. For me, it's really been about working closely with my team and with my partners in trying to almost level set from the beginning around where are we going? What's our shared vision? What are we striving towards? Really feeling comfortable with course correcting as we move along. When I think transformation is an often used word, at least it certainly it has been in Ontario for the last decade. We've been transforming and modernizing for many years now. And I just would say that one of the experiences that I've had being, fortunate to lead and work with a team, it's really about supporting the team to recognize that when you are truly looking to introduce completely different ways, perhaps, of delivering care or ensuring that you are delivering the best possible outcome, if you are going to get to that point, you're not going to get it right from the beginning, that you have to really be comfortable with course correcting, learning, where you may make some missteps and really trying to be open and comfortable and being that champion and support to your team around not always taking a linear approach to things. So often again and certainly in my work experience with you, Priya, you've supported our team around tests of pain. So what is it in the increment, what in a small way are we going to try that fits in nicely with the bigger vision that we may have? Whether that, again, as I said, introducing a new model of care or a completely new system. And so really being comfortable with that iterative approach and learning from clients, patients, families, point of care team members, when we're testing out some new things to figure out how do we get to that next step? So it's really about being clear if we are going to be transforming around what are those incremental steps we need to move us along, not being too linear about that though, and making sure when we do have a sense of what it is that we feel is that new practice or that new component of care delivery, making sure then that we hardwire it into our usual systems, whether that's monitoring through Power BI reports or incorporating it into your performance appraisal process, Whatever it is that you know is going to help support your team members in making it stick. I think that's something that's really an important ingredient when it comes to modernizing or transforming. And sometimes we forget. Hopefully that's answering some of your thoughts there, Priya, around the journey that I've been on. That's certainly been my experience.
Yeah, and David, as I listen to you, you talk about it not being a linear journey, about course correcting. And you know, I do a lot of work in transformation right now, and one of the things I hear about is the giving that space to course correct. And one big concept that I'm hearing right now is around psychological safety. Right. So when you talk about transformation and change, how do you create that safe space for those team members to that you mentioned that you work with? So it's just something that's front and center for me, because right now when I think about it, is there has to be that feeling that it's okay to learn from your mistakes. So what has been the way in which you've kind of created that space for your team and others?
And again, a great point. And the importance of safety within a team. And I would just comment that I feel like, I've been very fortunate in many different organizations that I've worked that I've really been fortunate to align from a values perspective in the team members that I've worked with around the importance of hearing and respecting different viewpoints. And especially from clients and point of care providers. So that to me is one really important upfront piece, depending on the de degree of change or transformation that you're doing, making sure that those stakeholders are part of the design, part of the thinking. So when it comes to being safe to offer, feeling safe, to offer feedback around, this isn't working or this doesn't line up or why are we going this way? Why is this happening? It's really making sure that you include those voices in the very early days when it comes to even defining what's the test of change you're going to do or what's the journey you're on together. And I would just say, in my experience, we've made some missteps where we haven't been as explicit or as inclusive early on, and with whether it's point of care or client and family, in some of that collaboration and that co-design approach. And that is often when we find ourselves, weeks or months down the road, needing to backtrack and, reset ourselves on, what is the problem we're trying to solve? How are we moving in this direction together? And I do believe that, from the openness and creating that environment of safety for team members, it really is through being very thoughtful around your approach and how you approach whatever elements of transformation that you're trying to bring forward. And I appreciate the challenge of that. That can be very challenging because you need to make sure that you have the right people around the table who perhaps bring the right knowledge of how what you're trying to do, but also an openness to where you're trying to go. And so I think though, really by that inclusive approach, you really do kind of generate the type of environment that will be safe for everyone to participate.
Yeah, and so when you talk about openness there, you know, I think about healthcare, what healthcare traditionally is. You kind of are, you know, following very prescriptive guidelines and, you know, regulatory practices. And we now find ourselves in a space where we're having to be open and innovative, if I can say so. And putting people out of their comfort zone in to some extent, right? So I think that, you know, when you try to think about transformation, and what is big right now is just around creating innovative ways of delivering models of care, point of care, et cetera. What are some ways in which that you feel that innovation has become part of your kind of blueprint?
I would say that, in terms of how it's become, part of a blueprint for me and my experience, it's really through, a couple of elements. One is making sure that I have a sense of where within our team there may be, or within our organization more broadly, there may be challenges around performance currently, whether that's client experience results,
Right.
costs of care, outcomes, so goal achievement. So a blueprint for me is really being clear about, where are we at currently, and then how does that line up with where we're going, as a whether it's as a sector. So in home and community care, we're moving down the path of more interprofessional care delivery, more integrated care delivery. So what is it that we're currently doing within our organization that fits with where the system's going? And where does it make sense from a client and provider experience perspective? So for me, when I often think innovation and modernization and transformation are overused words. And so at the end of the day, to me, it's really about being practical and thoughtful around, what are we trying to do? And of course, there's great frameworks that exist, the quintuple aim. We're always trying to keep a pulse on provider, staff, client, patient experience, satisfaction. So, but at the end of the day, it's really about where are we trying to go to help improve in those areas, no matter what the broad, no matter what the broad strategy is, and the maybe unknown tactics that we're trying to reach towards. I'm thinking more about like provincially within the home and community care system. It's not always as clear. It's not as clear around where are we going. So my blueprint as a leader is around, working with my team and my colleagues across an array of different expertise, quality, evaluation, research, digital supports. So really trying to understand, together, we all know we have opportunities to move things in the right direction. And how do we do that in a way that's lining up with the broader agenda, if that makes sense, Priya?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I'm going to go back to your earlier point about, stakeholders being included very from the beginning. And you mentioned quintuple aim, and of course we're now looking at from the lens of health equity, right?
For
So when
sure.
you're looking at stakeholder inclusion and you're looking at equitable access to health, with often vulnerable populations like the ones that you have worked with, I think the wondering that I've often had, and I'd love to pick your brain on this, is how do we make sure we're hearing from the voices that are not the ones that are always out there speaking up? The ones who are the quiet ones who are actually who have a wealth of data and information to tell us, like how do we include that voice in the way in which we're moving through these tests of change or pilots or our care models.
Yeah. I mean, that's incredibly important to your point around, especially when you're wanting to support individuals who are living in, equity deserving neighborhoods and communities. And so I can just say in my experience, it's really been through leveraging partnerships and outside of organizations where I've worked, obviously, no matter where it is in the different places, as you described, where I've worked for the last, many years, we have, I've been fortunate to have, in all of those organizations, client and care or family partner advisory councils. So individuals who represent, or bring, experience of their care experience with us, whether it's at a LIN level, a regional level, or whether it's local related to their personal support worker experience. So that's one way, of course, that you're able to ensure you're hearing from individuals who are receiving care and you're trying to work with around how are we improving care or maintaining what's working well. I think oftentimes we get so focused on change or different aspects of what we'd like to see happening, and we have to remember there are things that work well And how do we make sure that we identify those from that, whether that's a resident or a client or whoever? I think it's really important to know that. So what I would just say though is that in my experience, when you are really trying to, depending on your organization where you work, for me, it's been through networks and partnerships. So the Ontario Health teams, of course, here in Ontario, are really doing, in some areas, fantastic work about engagement with their residents. And they, you know, they've formed either specific networks or they have ambassadors. And so those are really, I feel, very important, you know, resources to tap into and make sure you're really hearing those voices. So, because they are very thoughtful about ensuring that they are finding ways to appropriately, respectfully access different voices within their community. And of course, that isn't the be all and end all, but it certainly is a step going in the right direction, especially when it comes to, you know, trying to connect with individuals who may not fall into the typical ways of connecting with an organization. You know, at Casey House, which is where I'm a board member, I'm always fascinated to hear the creativity that that leadership team brings to tapping into the different individuals. Obviously, it's very specific to the Toronto area, where they're really trying to understand the needs of individuals who are have HIV or are at risk of HIV, and perhaps may have other needs related to mental health or substance use. And they may not be voices that are very represented in some of those forums I just was talking about. They may not be safe places for them to share their voices. So it's I'm always you know, I certainly am always keen to hear and learn from other organizations and how they approach the importance of hearing from different stakeholders. Even here in this current organization where I work, we do a really great job of connecting and engaging with our clients, probably less so in regularly connecting and engaging with some of our staff and some of our employees. And it's important, of course, to have their view, their perspective at the point of care. And so I think there's always an opportunity for every leader to be thinking about how are you really getting at the different stakeholders who you're trying to work with and understand opportunity to have a positive impact.
When I listen to you, I guess the thing that strikes me is that, the term stakeholder means so many things, right? I mean, you're talking about your staff, you're talking about impacted individuals who are receiving care, you're talking about those that are going to, they're accessing services from partner organizations. So that whole concept of kind of wraparound model in a way and bringing clients and putting them at the center of that delivery and design. I guess the one question I would ask you is that, as you know, I've done a lot of strategic planning. And one of the key things that I hear a lot about is, how do we get that client-centered approach or that patient-centered approach, which is what I'm hearing and what you've just shared. What's your kind of take on it? Is that another word that's getting tossed around a lot, like you mentioned earlier, for some of the others? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think when it comes to person-centered care, I feel like, you know, and thinking about it in the context of home and community care, it's certainly something that many partners, many organizations in the home care space embrace because it's really all about truly partnering with the individual, identifying what's meaningful, having a very holistic view of their needs, broader than traditional health, like really being thoughtful about social determinants of health. So I think that person-centered or client-centered, it may be a buzzword, I guess, if that's the right way. But I would say that, you know, really being clear about what it is that your organization, certainly for me as a leader, it's what do we believe that we need to incorporate into our typical practices, either in delivering care or designing new care or supporting new systems, that really does embrace a person-centered philosophy. And so there are limits that are sometimes placed upon, in my experience, placed upon how you fully, you know, can live into delivering that person-centered approach. And those are limits that are beyond your organization. Certainly in my experience, home care has one lane, and unfortunately, right now, it's very siloed. It's very siloed by specific service streams. So you may not have a, you know, you may not be resourced appropriately in terms of actual funding of your home care services that limits what that broad view may be of supporting a more person-oriented or person-centered approach to your care. Now, we work very hard, just like every part of the home and community care system does every day, to have a meaningful, impactful, positive impact on client outcomes. But I would just say that there are finite resources, and there's the design of a system that doesn't lend itself necessarily to that person-centered approach in sort of like broad holistic terms, is my experience. And it doesn't take away from all the great work we do around person-centered training and person-centered thinking about supporting from a philosophical perspective. Absolutely, we do that. It's just that I feel like at times within our systems, there's just constraints.
Yeah,
and that's how it's been designed.
I hear what you're saying. It's almost like the sandbox has said, this is where you need to kind of deliver. And so it's been defined for you, whether it's by prescriptive legislative requirements or funding, contractual requirements, et cetera. So how do you actually, you know, think within the box? You know,
right.
There's a lot of buzzword about think outside the box, but it's what I'm hearing you say is think within the box to think about how do we make sure we put the people we're here to care for front and centered in that. That's pretty awesome, David.
I would just say, pretty quickly, sorry, just that on that piece, there are lots of ways right now currently in home care, whether it's through new hospital to home programs or new integrated service delivery models through Ontario health teams that are coming forward, that are, I mean, to use that analogy you've used about, they're looking to even define the box and, you know, what are the pieces of the box? So looking potentially at offering some, you know, new ways of thinking about how does integrated home care work. And I just would say that obviously that's going to be a journey, and it's not going to happen overnight. And again, but that's still really important pieces.
Mm-hmm. I like how you say figuring out what are those, what is that box even defined as? Because I think that's just a part of that whole evolution of the home care system. You know, a couple other things that you mentioned, you talked about the importance of working with quality research, digital enablers. And, you know, I think that one thing I've learned from having collaborated with you in the past is, you know, that kind of data-driven decision-making. So your takeaways for people who are kind of young, I would say, or kind of building their maturity on building their data capability, because a lot of time I work with providers and they are still trying to figure out what are their baseline measures. You know, how do they even define success beyond what the funders are asking for? So what would be your tips to those that are on that data maturity journey about how they should evolve so that they're, you know, growing in that area?
Yeah, wow. There are way more smarter people than me.
I'm not looking at it from your data hat or your research hat, but from your systems thinking hat about how do we shift the dial.
Right. Sure. So, I mean, you know, I would think that within the organizations I've certainly had the chance to connect with and work within, it's really about where what are all the different sources of quality data that you have access to? And what is your team, like the individuals who are working on, we're doing this work here right now about interprofessional care, bringing an interprofessional framework into our space within home care, and doing that even within those lanes that I described earlier. And so that is the team that I will go to and have gone to, and they have individuals who, what are the change ideas that we're working on? Oh, okay, it has to do with like huddling as a home care team, or it has to do with supporting better communication with clients in real time about what their schedule is from their different services, or understanding the different roles that team members play, PSW versus occupational therapist or a nurse in delivering upon the care plan. So when it comes to measures and indicators, it's really about being clear on what's your change idea and what do you currently have that you have some confidence in giving you a sense of that baseline. And so of understanding of where you're at right now. And sometimes you won't know. You're going to have to introduce something new, or you're going to have to augment, an active client survey or a discharge client survey or a focus group or some other way that you're going to have to get what you're looking for. And so I would just say that that's really, in my experience, it's really upfront being clear about what's the change idea, how are we going to measure that, what do we have that exists. We don't need more work. We don't need more kind of like, this isn't a, as my call, I say, this isn't a science project. We're not doing this, so we're doing this to actually have a meaningful impact and know if we're on the right track. And so really it's through that team that you surface what those indicators are, and then you make sure that you have had, that really you're paying attention to what they're telling you. So if they're showing no change, then maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it means whatever you've introduced, it's not breaking things. Or perhaps it's showing the opposite and it's not improving. It's going in the opposite direction, tells us we need to do something differently then. So I just would say, I guess when it comes to if I were a emerging or newer leader, it's really about working in partnership with others. To understand what exactly is it you're trying to change here and how can you measure that? And I've been very fortunate in all of my different leadership roles, whether it's at Mississauga Halton or here or even long ago provincially at the association, I had access to in my team, we had access to like an amazing decision support team, amazing business analysts who help to put the picture together around, this is what I hear you saying you're trying to do, and this is what you have that's reliable to help guide you in terms of are you on the right track? And so it's really making sure that you're always broad in who you include when it comes to making decisions, because making decisions around indicators or activities. Because it's through others' perspectives and experience that you'll get the richness of where you're trying to go. And if it truly is transformative change, you get the benefit of having a team around you. Quote unquote, transformational change takes a lot of effort, resource, time, painful. It can be very, it's not. It oftentimes it's a program of work with multiple projects that are guiding you along to higher level outcomes, right? And so that takes time, and you need the richness of expertise of a team that helps to support that going forward. And you get the benefit, frankly, of just frankly resilience together as a team. And trying to problem solve together, keep yourselves on track, whether it's the minutiae that you were talking about, Priya, in terms of indicators and baseline, but you just really benefit from the richness of that network, especially if you truly are doing some sort of transformational work, or work that frankly is going to get you the right outcomes, but is not going to be something that everyone's going to be necessarily initially happy to, you know, they may not necessarily see the what's in it for me, right? So they may have a sense of what's in it for me, and you may have a sense of what's in it for you, for them rather. But, you know, those pieces, as you well know, and all of your expertise around resistance management and supporting the change, like all of that comes through the richness of the right experts of team members around that piece of work and whatever role you play in that.
Yeah, a word you used just now, just when you're talking about team expertise and working together and collaborating on different areas, is resilience.
Yes.
Right. So let's talk about this, because the one thing I'm hearing from people out in the community is fatigue, like
yes.
exhaustion, saturation, the pace of transformation, pace of change. And so resilience, as you mentioned, is so important. And so I guess what would be, and this is post-COVID too, right? We're still kind
right.
of recovering from that whole impact on the healthcare system. I guess the one wondering that I would have there, David, is that, you know, how do we as a system build that resilience in our teams, because we're in a significant shortage of resources and you know, of course, financial constraints are in place. Your thoughts on that? Like, how do we build that resilience?
I would say that, you know, in terms of resilience, to me, it's really individual for everybody. So, you know, what is it that it's being really open and ensuring that you're equipping team members and yourself to make sure that they're making time for that, to know what is it that enriches you about this work, and how do we ensure that we're supporting people to have that? Because I do believe, and what frankly are the barriers? And you know, my team members would identify a whole host of things that we know we could be making better, easier for team members, like for our point of care, and to release them to just focus on care, to focus their time on care, and to reduce, you know, activities that are less valuable to that experience of engaging directly with the client and their family. And so, and that frankly informs all of our improvement plans that we have year over year. So, at the heart of that, though, it's really about just trying to make space for people to do the things that enriches them in their work. And I do think it is through making things easier, smoother, that you can allow people to have the benefits of the time in their day to do things that really impact them in a positive way. If I'm a point of care therapist or a PSW, you know, how are we making things easier for them? And I say that knowing right now that there are lots of things within my organization right now that we're working on to improve, to make that a reality. I think the other thing about resilience that's really important is making sure that it's not just you know, one team or one area of your organization that is focused on supporting that kind of, I'm avoiding using the term joy in work. I would just say, but at the end of the day, like, for example, in the last couple of organizations where I've worked, we had work-life pulse surveys that gave us a sense of, you know, where did we have some areas for improvement? And then typically it would be like a piecemeal approach to how we would make gains around specific areas of work life for our teams. And what we've been trying to do here is to do it in a more shared way. So how do we have like a shared team objective? How are we supporting each other and kind of making some improvements, even if it's just focusing on it and saying, you know what, this is an important objective for us as a team. Let's make some time for it. That in itself, I think, is adding to creating an environment that is going to hopefully support a bit more capacity to do the work they want to do the work that you feel enriches you as a person and brings value to you. So, yeah, I think that's a big question, Priya, and hopefully I've given you some thoughts around how I think that that I
I
would
think,
just, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
no, I was just going to say that in that, what I hear is that there's something that belongs to each of us as an individual, and then you as a leader and as an employer, how you create time, that's something I heard, and that space, to go back to finding joy in the
Yeah.
world, right? So the reason why people got into healthcare is that whole kind of carer concept that we've all been talking about for years. So yeah, sorry, David, you were going to add?
I just was going to say that, I only hesitate on the use of the term joy because I can appreciate that, in many different organizations in the health system right now, it's actually, almost really probably the use of the term joy is not appropriate. So that's where I was hesitating with that.
Yeah, that is a term that gets lots of conversation going for sure. So we'll pivot from that. I would be remiss if I didn't speak about you spoke about quality research and digital, and one of the big again another buzz phrase right now and buzzword I guess you could say is in the area of digital transformation. Like it's almost everything we're doing is there's some element of digital transformation, and it's almost so much that it becomes about the digital work rather than what it's giving you. So your thoughts on that, like is digital transformation something that's, are you seeing that it's actually improving client care, client outcomes? Is it truly an enabler or is it something standalone that's helping the larger behind the scene back office operations of an organization?
I would say that I think it's a couple of things quickly that it's how you define digital transformation, because I would say that thinking about organizations where I've worked, we may have used, we may have, rolled out a new way of providing access to care virtually for clients, patients, and families. And at the time, that may have been seen as a digital transformation. Whereas I feel like today, and certainly my colleague, who our chief technology officer, would have lots and lots of thoughts and comments about this. Everything is around artificial intelligence, and how are we even going into new ways of supporting? Supporting what care delivery looks like. And so I would just say that yeah, the definition of digital transformation, I think, is an interesting one. And to me, technology is always an enabler. So I mean, I learned long ago from someone who was an expert in technology, and they always impressed upon me the importance of technology is really here to enable, improvements in point of care. It's not really here to direct you or guide you. And that may, and I'm sure many people would say, well, of course not. And that's fine. But I often have had the experience where it is sometimes that interface around, patient care and technology, it's a little bit less focused on what truly are the benefits you're trying to realize, and a little bit on we're just going to deploy this technology. And so I think it's really important to partner, and it's really important for the patient care side of folks to really be clear around how can this enable improvements in the experience of delivering care or in the outcomes or in the experience of receiving the care. And so to me, digital is all about just being that enabler. Digital transformation is being that enabler. And yeah, it's a very exciting time, frankly, to see what's happening and what's coming in the next now and in the next few years.
Yeah, it certainly is. There's a lot going on. I just absolutely love how you said it enables improvement. I think that's
Yes.
a strategic phrase that you use there. Talking about what's coming as we wrap up our discussion, where do you think we will be in? And I know we haven't talked about this before, David, so I'm just going to throw it out.
Yeah, of course.
Where is our journey going to take us from the point of view of care delivery, home care? There's a, the aging population is increasing. You're seeing more frail elderly, complex medical conditions. There's a push certainly for integrated care, but it's delivered in a siloed manner, if I may say so, to some extent. As someone who's been a caregiver to parents, I've experienced that journey myself many times. I will tell you that I don't know about you, but I'm nervous about what care will look like when I am that senior that my mother was, as an
Yeah.
example. Yeah,
Yeah.
your thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm hopeful. I am hopeful, about the future for home and community care. And I really, and I'm hopeful in the sense that, there are things that are happening in the environment that, although as I always like to say, feel like molasses in January. They are going in the right direction around what do they want to achieve. So whether it's better connection to primary care, ensuring that you have a care plan that reflects the true needs of the person, thinking about social determinants of health, thinking about, including all of the different partners at the table to contribute to that care plan. And then even more importantly, including all those partners when it comes to funding decisions, planning decisions. I have seen in the last few years through some of the Ontario Health Team work, a bit of life coming to the notion of integrated service delivery systems. It's probably not moving at a pace that everyone would like to see. But it's definitely, I think, has potential to go to a more integrated home and community care system where you really do have primary care, home care, community support services that we're all working together with our hospital partners in helping with things that we've been working on for many years, seamless transitions, one care plan. So I do think that I am hopeful. I feel like there needs to continue to be a focus on investment, especially in the home and community care space where there's such differences around pay when it comes to being a personal support worker, a nurse, just there's so whole host of funding needs and recognition of that. So, but I do feel overall that that there is a lot of hope, and I can see some activities that are going to help inform an actual roadmap to getting to where we need to be. I think the other thing, Priya, that makes me feel a little bit hopeful as well is that we are truly looking in the parts that I've been part of, and I'm nowhere near as engaged in many different things that are happening in the system for home and community, but in the small sliver that I participate in, where I see pieces, there are thoughtfulness around building off of what we know works. Making it better, but not just starting from the very beginning. Like, let's actually look at what a pathway exists within home care and think, how does that fit now within a more integrated care pathway that's broader? Let's think about being consistent when it comes to one hospital to home program and another hospital to home program. So those are great. Those are really thoughtful ideas to be building off of. What we know is what, hopefully we have to have evidence to show that those things work. Can't just be, well, we've done it this way, so we always have to do it that way. It has to be about, there's evidence to say this does work, or there's evidence to show that this is a component that we should incorporate. And so in the little sliver that I get to participate in at times, I do hear and see that we are looking to learn from what may be better practices. It's not just about wholesale starting from the beginning. And that speaks to really just the commitment of leaders who, they're connected, they connected to each other, they know each other, have strengths that they can bring to bear on something that they want to work to together, and they respect each other's opinions. And having come from working at the regional level, I didn't always see that before. And that wasn't that long ago. That was just like five plus years ago. And so from then to today, it is so different to see things how they're in a positive direction. So that is what gives me hope. Now ask me on another day where I haven't had as much coffee and I may say something different, but that is how I'm feeling.
Well, I will tell you that just hearing you say that tells me that we are shifting the dial, right? That to me is a good news story, and it gives me hope, I guess, for when I am someone who needs that level of care and support, and I'm sure others like us, who are in the same place as we are. David, I want to thank you for your time. This has been a very enriching conversation, and I look forward to a continued discussion with you and others on the healthcare transformation agenda. Thank you once again for taking the time.
Thank you, Priya. It's a pleasure.